Good morning and welcome. You are tuned into 2SER 107.3 and it is 10 a.m. on a Saturday morning. Time for Final Draft. Books writing and literary culture every weekend, helping you discover your next favourite read. Now, my name is Andrew Popel. Every week, it is a pleasure to bring you new books. Today, no exception. I have two fantastic new Australian books. First up on the show, I am speaking with Claire Varley. Her new novel is The Book of Ordinary People, but it is no ordinary book. It looks at the interweaving tapestry of our modern cities, taking us to Melbourne and five seemingly ordinary lives threatening to crisscross. It is a fascinating look at the way we live and lives that are far from ordinary. Later on in the show, I have a fantastic new comedy in Catherine Collett's The Helpline. Going into a local council and the Senior Citizens Helpline, we meet Germaine Johnson. She is a senior mathematician, that's what she'll tell you, but she has just taken a job on the Senior Citizens Helpline and is finding herself embroiled in the strange machinations of local affairs. I love bringing these books to you. If you want to discover more conversations about books you love, check out the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. And if you're already enjoying the podcast, I want to ask you to help me share Australian writing and great stories far and wide. I know people are enjoying this across Australia, across the globe. And if you could just recommend it, share it with two book-loving friends, we can really grow this community of book lovers. And isn't it just nice when you have someone else to talk books with, to share that sort of water cooler moment that everyone seems to get with these bingeable series? But I want to make it happen about books. So that is the Final Draft Great Conversations podcast. Share it far, share it wide, and let's get the love of Australian books out there. We're going to take a short break, and then it'll be back with Claire Varley's The Book of Ordinary People on 2SER 107.3.
What are they doing to fix the economy?
Who knows what happened to our taxes? On the Money does.
Bitcoin, blockchain, cryptocurrencies. What is all this stuff?
On the Money gives me the edge when I have to sort out my finances.
How will the budget affect me?
Everything you need to know about finance, business, and the economy.
How can you get the best out of your hard-earned dollar?
If your dollars don't make sense, listen to On the Money.
Thursdays, 7 p.m.
I love listening to On the Money.
You are on 2SER 107.3 and you're listening to Final Draft. My name's Andrew Popel and I am joined on the line by Claire Varley. Her first novel was 2015's The Bit in Between, and today we're discussing her second work, The Book of Ordinary People. Claire, thank you for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's my absolute pleasure. I want to introduce people to the Book of Ordinary People. We begin in traffic. Melbourne's north grinds to a halt, not with a bang, but with a whimper, and the populace are forced to swear impotently into their lattes if they had the foresight to grab one before they entered the fray. Now, across the city, five strangers begin their day in varying states of disarray caused by the gridlock, and we, the reader, we're poised to enter their ordinary lives. Now, I found it absolutely extraordinary, your weaving together of these stories. Tapestry may well be a well-worn analogy for intersecting narrative lives, but I'm going to use it. I'm going to use it to give a small spoiler warning, not for sort of some grand reveal of a murder, but for the small pleasures of the novel that we're going to inevitably discuss. We talked about off-air just the fact that of discussing the interweaving of these lives kind of tells you a little bit more about the Book of Ordinary People than even I knew when I opened the cover.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think tapestry is, you know, so one of those, I guess, overused words in the literary world, but I think it's such a good word to use. And it was something that I thought about a lot. You know, I wanted to create this book where we had these five very different people who were doing very different things with their lives, but who were in the one geographical area. And I wanted to look at how their lives interconnected, whether it was in brief moments, in more complex moments, and to really work out how we can have these spaces where all these very different people exist, but they use the same spaces in different ways, or the same event has very different repercussions on each of their lives. So I really wanted to explore that idea of how we could pull together these five seemingly very different people into this one world.
Yeah, let's think for a little minute about this idea of community. It's not always so easy in cities like Melbourne or Sydney, where we both are. I think we've all had the experience of running into a friend or an acquaintance in this oblique location and wondering, what are the odds? In the Book of Ordinary People, we watch sort of almost the opposite happen as seeming strangers circle each other's lives. I was often tantalised at the prospect of them meeting in your narrative. Were you hoping to explore the way communities work or perhaps don't work within a city?
Absolutely. And I think, you know, one of the things that has always really fascinated me, you know, in my day job, I work in the community sector, and a lot of that work is around, you know, meeting very different people, people from all walks of life, and getting to know what's going on for them. And I think what that has sort of really done for me is to show how we have these communities where there's just so many different stories in them, where people have, you know, completely different experiences of the world, but also very similar experiences in other ways. So, you know, I've always been fascinated by how people can relate to each other in so many ways, but also be very, very different. And I think that was something I really wanted to tease out. And, you know, my starting point for this book was one of the characters who is a woman who is from Iran. She's in the community. She is an asylum seeker who is waiting for the outcome of her visa that is waiting with the immigration department. And, you know, at the time when I first started writing this book, I was working with asylum seeker communities in Melbourne's outer north. And what I didn't realise at the time until I started that work was how many people were actually living in our communities, were on bridging visas, had been waiting for a number of years for the outcome of their visas due to a whole lot of different government policy, yet were very much a part of our community, were using the same spaces, were, you know, their children were going to our schools, they were part of our community, but we just didn't notice them. And, you know, 30,000 people, a significant number of people. So that was my starting point to really start to look at what else is going on in our community? Who are all the different people that make up our communities that we might not think about or we might not have any experience of because we don't consciously come up against them in our day-to-day life? So that was really what I wanted to look at.
I wanted to ask about your title. It's Ada and Elham that introduce us to the Shahnameh, the Persian Book of Kings, and in their conversation, they imagine that their own lives might be chronicled in the Book of Ordinary People. But I wondered what you felt was the difference between the epic tales of kings and their trials and the things they must overcome and our own individual, everyday, dare I say, ordinary trials.
I think so much of that difference is in maybe how we privilege or celebrate those lives. And one of the things that I guess I wanted to play around with this book was that often the stories that we tell about people or the events that we hold up as being these incredible events or these noteworthy events or things to celebrate are these massive, you know, tales of kings, tales of people who have done hugely notable things and changed the world in massive ways. And that's often to the detriment of people who get up and live their lives each day and do what we might consider ordinary things, but are really meaningful, important things that build the world, and that often we forget about those people. We don't celebrate those people. And, you know, I think we've got a huge history of only telling some of the stories and only celebrating some of the achievements of what's happened to the world, without really looking at the fact that there are so many people who do have what we would consider ordinary lives, but those ordinary lives are so meaningful and do incredible things for other people and make really important little ripples in the world, but they're not sticking their head, you know, high up above the parapet. They're not necessarily getting celebrated for doing incredible things, but their lives are so important, and all of our lives are so important. And, you know, I think we each have incredible stories to tell about what we've done with our lives, and that's often overlooked.
And in your other characters, we have Evangelina's mother, she was a migrant from Greece in the 1950s. Patrick's father struggled to regain the language that he lost because his father wanted the children to assimilate. Ada is forced to question whether the country in which she has sought refuge even wants her. As a nation, we have a legacy of welcoming people from across the seas, but then being kind of absolute shits to them and demanding they do this thing called assimilation, which just kind of seems to be an erasal of identity. And now we barely seem capable of that. What did you want through the book the readers to understand about these ordinary people?
That's a really good question. And I think, you know, this is something that I think about a lot. You know, I work with people from many, many different countries. My own family is, you know, Greek Cypriot background. I think that Australia is in such a unique position in terms of who is Australian, who contributes to our culture and identity, and it is so diverse. Yet we have not really worked out a way of acknowledging that and of celebrating that. And, you know, we often talk about the fact that we've got this history of constant migration and that all of that history influences who we are today and our values, yet we really easily forget that. And, you know, I think there's definitely a tension between the fact that you know, we celebrate being a multicultural country, but we often don't really unpack what that looks like. And the fact that, you know, for a majority of Australians, their identity is a whole lot of different cultures and aspects and characteristics that are coming together to constitute who they are. And I think that it's a really interesting tension that we constantly have, because the Australian identity is constantly evolving and being recreated and being influenced by all the different people who make up our society, yet we are still not doing a very good job of recognising that and of celebrating that has influenced who we are and will continue to influence who we are into the future.
I am speaking with Claire Varley about her novel, The Book of Ordinary People. And Claire, look, I hope I haven't paid short shrift to the beautiful small moments that you create in The Book of Ordinary People. I've actually got a note for myself here that you could do worse than learn a little bit about friendship from The Book of Ordinary People, because I found myself liking and loathing and coming to terms with each of the characters at diverging points of the novel. I'm not going to ask if you had a favourite. I'm just going to thank you so much for taking the time to chat to me about this wonderful book.
Oh, thank you so much. It's been really lovely talking to you.
This is 2SER 107.3. You're listening to Final Draft, and that was my conversation with Claire Varley about her new novel, The Book of Ordinary People. Now, we're going to take a short break before coming back with Catherine Collette's The Helpline. This is a new track from a band from Stockholm, I believe. This is Many Voices Speak with Necessaries.
As the sky shifting guards, I will go out and face that dawn. Have you laid low? Were you deleted part? When I notice a burn in my heart. You knew me back then. Thank you.
enjoy what you're hearing? Help us to keep it coming. 2SER is supporter funded. We rely on your generosity to continue producing the independent stories, ideas, and music you love. You can support us at any time by heading online to 2ser.com/support. Thanks for being part of the 2SER community.
You are tuned in to 2SER 107.3. My name's Andrew Popel, and just there we heard from Many Voices Speak, the track was Necessaries. You're on Final Draft. It is books, writing, and literary culture every week, coming to you with books, authors, and just getting between the covers, really, finding out more about the books you love. Now, I am very fortunate I'm joined in the studio today by Catherine Collette. Catherine is a writer and an environmental engineer, and today we're going to be discussing her debut novel, The Helpline. So, Catherine, welcome. It's a pleasure to welcome you here to 2SER.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
I want to give people the setup for The Helpline, because I think you really need to have to understand a little bit of Germaine Johnson to know what's going on. Now, The Helpline, it introduces us to Germaine Johnson at a low ebb in her life. Having lost her job as a senior mathematician, she's struggling for purpose. A job on the Senior Citizens Helpline just was not on the cards. But Germaine she's quickly drawn into the machinations of local council by the mayor and a disgraced Sudoku champ. And she finds herself at odds with the local seniors centre. Okay, so here we are. Germaine does not sound like the person who's going to untangle this. And look, the intricacies of this plot, they sort of set up, and for me, they signaled the heart of The Helpline, and that was relationships. Germaine's a mathematician, and that's her approach to life. But I found that you clearly wanted to signal and explore the limitations of sort of a formulaic idea about how we relate to each other.
Yeah, it's true. I guess I see Germaine, so she's a mathematician. She would probably correct me and say she's a senior mathematician.
but not a statistician or an actuary.
No. So she's someone who at the start of the book is very ambitious and very alone, and then through the course of the novel becomes less ambitious and less alone. So it is a book about social connection. Mm. You know, I suppose on the blurb or the way that I describe Germaine is she's great with numbers, she's not great with people. Mm. So having her forced into a situation on a helpline where she has to help people, you know, she's pretty unsuited to that kind of a job.
Yeah, I'm interested in the word you use there, ambitious. At the beginning, she's ambitious, but she becomes less so. And that strikes me as an interesting take. Now, it's your book. You can have whatever take you want. But there is certainly something about the experiences Germaine goes through where she has to take on different ambitions, I found. And in fact, the reason she's avoided them so far is almost the ambition was too large for her. She was afraid, in fact.
Yeah, I think that saying, big fish in a small pond, is something I think of when I think of Germaine. Only Germaine is, you know, she has this compulsion to be the best, but the reality is she's not very good. So she's more like a medium-sized fish that is just searching for a puddle. So that, you know, that's kind of her best-case scenario, really, in life.
Yeah, it always struck me, too, that her perspectives are complicated, and she often does things that you wouldn't expect. I mean, I would expect her to be a sort of a by-the-numbers type person, follow the rules because the rules are there. But she very quickly kind of wants to get rid of the handbook because the handbook, it's not cross-referenced adequately for her. And so she's kind of like, I will come up with a better way to do this. But she also, I said before, she's an unreliable narrator. She has a way of just misreading people perfectly. People that might be a little bit nefarious, she seems to think the best of. People who seem to have nothing but the best of thoughts about her, she's suspicious of.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. I think, you know, there's a mayor at the council that Germaine is, I guess in some ways aspires to be like the mayor. And it is that thing of the outward trappings of office. You know, the mayor is, I suppose, is quite wealthy and is the mayor. And I guess Germaine aspires to that in the way that she clutches to being a senior mathematician, which is better than being a normal mathematician.
Yeah. It's really interesting, and I don't think I'm giving anything away here, because in the very first interaction between the mayor, and interestingly, this is exactly where we're going. I want to ask more about the mayor, but in the very first interaction, you can see the fact that Jermaine doesn't get what the mayor is really like is exactly the reason she will never be anything like
the
mayor.
Yeah, that's right. Mm. That's true. She's yeah, she wants those things, but I suppose at the end she doesn't really want those, you know. She's not willing to compromise herself to the point of that would be necessary to get ahead, to get those things.
For whatever reason, she doesn't have the ability to manipulate people like that.
No, she doesn't. She is pretty, she can be quite binary in the way that she thinks about the world and, and quite straightforward.
So now we're talking about Verity Firth, the mayor. And through the mayor, and you sort of had this commentary on unscrupulous politics emerging. You may not have intended this to be timely, but I feel like you've kind of tapped into a mouldering zeitgeist in Australia at the moment. So we're just talking about the local golf club versus the senior centre in the helpline, but I wonder, do you have any thoughts on the idea of personality politics and the idea of serving the public good? Was there anything you wanted us to take from it?
I mean, I do think the theme of corruption is a theme in the book and ambition. And it is a humorous novel, like it's a comedic novel. And I think partly the reason that that works is because the stakes seem low. So because it is set around a senior senator and a golf club, and yes, people are invested in those things, but, you know, in relative terms, they are quite small. And I think that's why humour can work in that situation. But, yeah, it's a different ballgame when it's Donald Trump, who has sort of the United States that he's...
Yeah,
that's a far more troubling situation.
Or even closer to home. I mean, I was reading this as we were waking up every morning and asking ourselves, who is the PM today? And you're right, when the stakes seem small, we say things to ourselves like, well, it matters, but it's not the end of the world. But you very much, there's an arc to Verity's character where we learn that, you know, the rot sets in early, but it doesn't stop people necessarily, you know, wanting to move on, move higher up.
And I think, you know, it is a book that essentially has a happy, you know, it's a happy ending kind of a book. But, you know, I remember being taught about endings in a creative writing course at RMIT. And even for a happy ending, you need a bit of bad. And for a sad ending, you need a bit of hope. And I think, you know, without giving too much away, the people who do the wrong thing don't necessarily pay the price for doing the wrong. You know, they don't necessarily get ahead, but they're also not, which I think is sometimes true in the world.
And I don't want to take anything away from the comedic value, but I think fans of the Helpline are now asking themselves, should we be checking on senior citizen centres in Peter Dutton's electorate? I'm speaking with Catherine Collett, and we are discussing her debut novel, The Helpline. It's a comedy, but you might be forgiven because a lot of my questions have delved into the serious side of things. And it is important that we do end on a big note. And I hope I haven't left the most serious to last, because we've been ignoring the elephant in the room. Jermaine is obsessed with Sudoku, and she runs into Incognito, her disgraced hero, who was a former Sudoku champion. I remember puzzling fondly over Sudoku at uni. Why, though? Why Sudoku? What?
I quite like Sudoku. Sudoku's really hard. And I also like those, you know, worlds where people are obsessed about really obscure things. And the idea of competitive Sudoku, I just find amusing.
I could have Googled this, but it's more fun to ask. There's a whole mythology around the Sudoku championships, and Jermaine's a bit of a stan for the whole situation. Does it really exist?
Is there competitive Sudoku. There's a World Puzzle Federation that does do competitive Sudoku. And a few years ago, an Australian guy, I think he was a cricketer, put together, just basically self-nominated, an Australian team to represent. So there was about four of them. I think they went to India and competed for the nation. I think they were aspiring sportsmen that really hadn't made the grade as sportsmen, so went and represented Australia and made, like, cricket-style jackets to wear over there and sort of fulfil their fantasies of representing their nation.
How'd they do?
And they did appallingly. Like, they could barely even... they didn't really even understand the concept of Sudoku, let alone, you know, stand up against the world champions.
But we lionised their go-get'em attitude. That is the most that is the most Australian thing ever. Where do we go from here?
Yeah, exactly.
I am speaking with Catherine Collett. We are discussing the helpline. It is a wonderful exploration of an individual, but also relationships. Unless you work in council, and then you might just think it's vaguely libelous. And all angry Sudoku fans can tweet us at Final Draft 2SER. Catherine, I want to thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Women Who Rock is a new 2SER podcast promoting female musicians and artists. Join Matt Wright as he delves the depths of female creativity in Sydney. Find Women Who Rock on iTunes or on your favourite podcast app.
That's right. You are on 2SER 107.3, and we do have a fantastic array of original podcasts that we produce here at the station. It's part of our programming. It extends our programming, and it allows us to really tell amazing stories. Women Who Rock is just one of them. Final Draft's Great Conversations podcast is another, and I'm going to plug it because both my conversations today, Claire Varley's on The Book of Ordinary People and Catherine Collett's The Helpline, will be going up on the podcast. There is so much to discover there already. Last week, I spoke with Jane Caro about Just Flesh and Blood, and there is an extended conversation with Jane where we look into the intersection of history and contemporary issues and women's place in the world. There is my devastating conversation with Behrouz Bashani about his book No Friend But the Mountains and Australia's offshore detention policies that mean he has been imprisoned on Nauru for 5 years. It's all up there on the podcast in extended format. Get the whole conversation and really get into the book. I would love if you subscribed because that means you don't actually have to think about the podcast. It's just going to appear every Monday morning. You're also going to get all the bonus material that that I release from time to time. If you want to share that love, can I please ask you to suggest it to two friends? Instead of, hey, here's a great book, why don't you say, here's a great podcast about books, and it's a great way to find your next favourite read. Thank you so much again to Claire Varley and to Catherine Collett for sharing their books on the show today. It's almost time for The Vulture's Nest, so I'm going to have to say goodbye. Stay tuned, though. The Vulture's Nest, if you have not listened in before, it's an amazing look at the week in news. It takes a lighter side. It gets serious. It is a fantastic way to catch up on the things you missed. I will, of course, be back next week. September is going on, and I have Chrissy Neen joining me to discuss her new book, Wintering. The Australian Classics Book Club is coming up. And we've also got Supporter Drive coming up next October if you want to become a 2SER supporter. My name is Andrew Popel. You are listening to Final Draft on 2SER 107.